Welcome to the Age Stage. I'm Vicky Barber, and behind the controls we have the amazing Brody Guzet.
We missed you last week.
I know. I missed coming in as well.
I know.
Unfortunately,
you did.
I was under the pump, and I don't like letting you down.
No, of course you don't. Of course you don't.
And I missed seeing everyone, all the guys.
Yeah. Well, they
were they all here?
No. We didn't have Tom here again. Tom's been a bit busy.
Tommy.
But it went well. But it didn't have the same. It just missed.
It just missed the Vicky vibe.
It did. It did. Absolutely.
So, well, I'm back this week.
Back.
That's right.
Nice to have you home.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
So how was your week?
It was very busy.
Was it? Yeah.
But, that's the way life is for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah.
Just from one thing to the next.
I know, I'm retired and I hate it. I just need to retire from retiring.
I don't think anyone could fully retire. You can't just sit on a beach and do nothing, can you?
So, what's on the show this week?
Well, we have Stuart Shaw with us from our panel. So he's with us today.
I do like Stuart.
We do like Stuart,
well,
don't we?
Well, we do, because he's such a fountain of knowledge.
He is. He's a font.
Font.
Of information.
Yes. Well, font, not as in typeface.
No. Sorry.
Right, okay. Yes. Just a little artistic joke.
So we have Stuart with us, and he'll be talking with us today about it's never too late to learn. So maybe we'll even learn something today, Brody. There you go.
We should, yeah.
We also have an old friend back with us today in the studio, and that's Samantha Dickerson. So she'll be talking to us about, when it comes to that final journey, because there's a lot of pressure, there's a lot of decisions to be made, there's a bit of an ambulance chasing mentality out there, so she's trying to talk to us about taking a moment, look for the solutions, and then
see what new ways.
How we're doing it in new ways, and then the last segment, I think you've already interviewed.
Well, I have.
This particular person.
Yes, now Sue Noble, we spoke to her on Monday on The Breakfast Show.
Right.
With Brendan and I. And because it's volunteer week this week.
Oh, we have our own week.
We have our own week. We don't get a day, we get a
full week. Where's our badge? Where's our sash?
the issue is important because when we start to talk about what it's worth, it'll gobsmack you, I tell you.
As in monetary?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it will be mind-blowing, actually.
It is phenomenal what it's worth, so we're going to be talking
to her. Well, I'm looking forward to chatting with Sue then.
Afterwards, for the third segment of the day. But of course, as always, we have to have...
Oh, we have to have our special music.
Of course we do. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friends. I
get high with a little help. Welcome, Stuart.
Hi, Vicky. Hi, Brody. How are you?
You're looking very svelte and on holiday-ish.
Svelte? Gee, I'm just holding my stomach in it. But
you're trying to impress,
that's
Stuart.
That's not a phrase that's used with me often, but thank you very much.
Well, you are looking relaxed being on holiday, so thank you for coming in. And
good to see you, Vicky, after last week.
Yes.
We did miss it, didn't we?
Sorry.
We lack colour.
I'm only in black and white today.
We had too much testosterone in one room. Started talking about cars and
technology. Peter did buy a new car and it was impressive.
And boy, didn't we hear about that.
Oh.
Didn't we though?
So is he making up for other things?
A bit of light and shade in amongst the group.
It is. Now, we're going to have a chat today. And I want to just take this bit because
yes,
I know this
course,
is going to make
Brody.
You feel uncomfortable, and I don't blame you.
Well, it's something topical.
It is, isn't it?
Yes, at the moment.
It's on the news. It's been on the news, and I thought that we would just address it.
Briefly touch on it.
Because it is so unpleasant, and it is to do with age, that I think we need to explore what its potential impact is. The story was from the ABC that a woman in aged care... Now, if you're having something to eat at the moment, I hope that you put it down, because they found maggots in her mouth in a Newcastle care centre. She died, apparently, the following day. Now, allegedly, under care with the company, which has 39 facilities in New South Wales, this event took place, not yesterday, but recently. But they claimed that afterwards that the palliative care processes were not followed at the time, and Shirley Carter, who was the woman that passed away, was being given checks every 4 hours not every 2 hours, which is, to me, as an excuse, is such a spin doctor nonsense to say, well, how quickly do maggots grow? I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And for her daughter, who we believe has raised this issue later in the day, perhaps we'll come on to that. But the question is, and I know that this will be a question that will be asked by a number of our listeners, how could something like that possibly happen in this day and age? So to address that, how does that happen, and what are the balances and checks that in Victoria? Let's just worry about Victoria. An interesting story, isn't it?
It was an interesting story when it came out, and of course we don't know all the facts about the case.
No, that's
so
true.
We don't know whether her death was cause and effect, or whether she was in palliative care, as I understand it. So there's a number of things we don't know about the entire topic. Certainly the system of aged care has a range of checks and balances in it, that inevitably dealing in a people business, then things will go wrong for a variety of reasons. We may not have followed our policies, we may not have followed our procedures, we may have simply stuffed up on a particular day for a whole myriad of events. You know, we may have given you the wrong meal, we may have given you something you're allergic to, you may have had a fall. There's a raft of issues that...
It's not going to be a perfect world.
It is not a perfect world.
But that is bordering on the obscene as an experience, a theory.
From what we know about the headline,
yes.
Then yes, that is something that should be examined.
Yes.
Without question. And there are...
And they're calling for an investigation into that, aren't they?
There's a number of processes that are followed by aged care through legislation. Mm-hmm. We have an Aged Care Complaints Commissioner, and that's Australia-wide. Ray Lamb is the head of that particular organisation, and they have offices, I believe, within each state and probably each territory as well. But that's certainly there's staff and officers within each state to investigate complaints from consumers. And the complaints can be for any particular matter that they feel aggrieved about. And this would be one.
So someone can go to this particular organisation objectively, make the complaint, and then the investigation
occurs.
And then occurs.
The complaints commissioner will assign a staff member to that. And from our experience, we've had, I think, two complaints over the journey that have been investigated by the complaints commissioner. Both have been handled fairly rigorously in terms of the process, and realistically, it is a good, robust system in terms of the process. That they will investigate from the provider's perspective of what happened, what went wrong, what we learned from it, and from the consumer's perspective, what actually occurred from their perspective, and that involves talking to the complainant and the family member, if that's what the complainant would want. There's two different types of complaints. One can be an anonymous complaint, and one can be an open complaint where the complainant is identified. And different people choose to remain anonymous if they consider it's just a broad-ranging complaint on behalf of a group of people in a facility, as opposed to a specific complaint affecting my mum or my dad.
How do they make that complaint?
Any one of a variety of ways. You can ring the complaint service, you can write to them, email them, actually lodge a complaint. I was going to say you could... In the first instance, you're always best to talk to the facility.
Yes, sure.
Of course.
And the complaints commissioner would actually suggest that as the first step, but you don't have to do that. You know, if a complaint is just so out there, you may choose simply to go to the complaints people from the outset. And then whatever follows from that will be a binding decision from them. Depending upon the complaint, they may choose to escalate it within the department if they believe that it is, you know, a really serious matter, and other courses of action could follow from that, including the quality agency coming out and undertaking a surprise, an unannounced visit, as opposed to a surprise visit, like, you know, we're not leaping out of a cake, but, you know, an unannounced visit.
It's a secret shopper type.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Just to investigate what is going on and looking at your systems and seeing what has failed. So you've got really two safeguards at a Commonwealth level to follow the matter through. It is, say, a robust system, and the Commonwealth have played around with the legislation behind the complaints process a couple of times. They believe they've strengthened it each year, and certainly, you know, the complainant gets a good hearing through the process.
If real neglect was found of a serious nature, let's assume, not in this instance, which we'll take a mythical one, somebody dies through neglect, they starve to death, for example, could a facility be deregistered?
There would be a number of steps before. There are enough mechanisms in place that the Commonwealth can introduce sanctions mm-hmm. On a facility. The agency can introduce sanctions on a facility. So in two different guises. If you've breached the quality standards, then sanctions can be imposed by the Commonwealth on that. And that can be quite punitive, you know, effectively causing you to consider whether you want to stay in the business. So it can be that serious an issue. Now, over the years, a number of places have received sanctions, and those places in the main, I think where the sanctions have been upheld, that most of those places have in fact closed down or the business has been sold to other providers.
Because the brand damage is so great.
The brand damage is so great.
Is there a way that a potential client or a potential resident can check whether there's been complaints against a particular establishment?
That's probably a really good question. Under the retirement village legislation, so not the aged care legislation, we are required to advise every year at an annual meeting, mm-hmm. how many complaints have been lodged by people within the village or representing people in the village, and what the outcome of those complaints were, to try and identify whether there's any systemic process.
Right.
We actually think that, and that's, you know, the people are not identified, so we don't know that Vicky Barber made a complaint
yes.
on the 6th of July because the grass wasn't cut properly. It was that there was a complaint about whatever
the
might be.
Issue was.
And so, you know, no one's actually held up to be exposed in that environment. And that works well. And we actually think that if that was to apply in the Commonwealth, that probably is not a bad process.
Mm.
That way at least a consumer does have the ability to say, you know,
to do a little bit of, even if it's just an online search or something, to sort of...
Yeah, but, you know, there were
find their
half a dozen
record.
Complaints, and these were the matters that the complaints covered. That would probably be a really good thing for the government to introduce.
That doesn't go onto your website, though, does it? That wouldn't...
No,
if I was doing it as a search.
It doesn't go onto our website. Our annual report does, but the reporting under the Retirement Village Act complaints doesn't go there.
Doesn't, no.
That goes to the department, does it? And then,
no, it actually goes nowhere than to the people attending the meeting.
Right, so therefore there's no sort of public awareness of that particular
aspect. And it's probably worth considering how you could take that further and put it on public display.
Mm-hmm.
That freedom of information? Is that possible?
Look, it could be a possibility, but I'd
like to
think...
You could have due cause.
Yeah, but I think there has to be a better way in which complaints that are found to be upheld become public domain issues.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be careful. You're right, it does need to be managed, because out of context is horribly damaging for everybody.
Yeah. And there's no doubt that within villages, within aged care, that every place would have what would be known as a vexatious complainant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
That nothing is ever going to be right.
No.
And you don't want that sort of person to skew the results of what would otherwise be a good business. But notwithstanding that, I mean, even though we might consider a complaint to be frivolous or vexatious, we are required to follow due process. And we need to explain ourselves to the Complaints Commissioner about the actions that we've taken and what we've done. They need to then determine what is going to be the process to resolve the matter.
Does that apply only to complaints that come from the your actual guests? What about their families?
Oh, no, that's...
It's included.
For aged care, that's for anyone. You could just be a friend of a relative and you didn't like what was happening.
Right.
And so you could lodge a complaint with the aged care commissioner. If it was for the retirement village, so the independent living unit section, which is under state legislation, that all we're required to do, if the person makes a complaint pursuant to the Act, so that's, and we do make that distinction, because anyone might just say, you know, I didn't like the way the grass was mown.
Right.
To trivialise the issue.
Well, the food was very hot.
Yeah, the food was, yeah, whatever it might be. That's just, okay, I'm letting you know that this was my experience, as opposed to a complaint under the Act that, you know, the food is repeatedly, cold is probably a better issue.
Yeah, yeah.
Food is repeatedly being cold, and therefore I want to lodge a complaint because I actually want something to done with it, done about that, as opposed to it being an isolated incident. So within aged care, though, any complaint, so if you're just a friend visiting a person in an aged care facility and there's something that you see regarding anyone sitting around in the aged care facility, you could in fact lodge a complaint explaining what it is that you saw. You would probably make that an anonymous one under those circumstances because you didn't want itself to be known to be speaking on behalf of other people, but that's of a discretion solely of the complainant. But if a complaint goes to the Complaints Commissioner, they then look at the merits, seek comments from, say, the aged care facility, and go back and discuss it with the complainant to see whether they're satisfied with the investigation that's occurred or whether further action needs to be taken.
I'd like to ask you a question, my dear,
yes.
Because it's in your professional biosphere. There are 39 of these places, all under the same brand banner. For a matter like this to get out onto the news, the damage to such a brand...
The damage of the brand could be quite extensive. However, it's then how they go into...
The mitigating.
And the management of that and the stepping up and taking full responsibility for it and then publicly replying by saying it's not just the now we're doing the two-week or the two-hourly check, sorry, but, you know, what other steps have they taken... are they supportive of there being a more full investigation or the, you know, calling for a whole industry investigation, etc.? But the damage will be big.
Yes. Well, the argument, of course, and this goes back to this, well, the check every 2 hours instead of every 4 hours, which seems such a blatant nonsense. Is that because that came out of somebody with... just sort of made it up as a story.
It sounds like a knee-jerk reaction to what they used to do.
It wouldn't have come from a spin doctor, would it? Or PR?
I don't know. I'm not...
Well, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds so implausible.
It does, but...
So
they would have their own advisors
on that topic.
Yes.
Can we touch on the other side of that?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that the death, whilst the person was in palliative care... Was the death expected because of whatever the underlying issue was or not? I.e., did the matter end up going to the coroner? Because that is equally one of the checks and balances that go into the industry. That if there's an unexplained death for whatever reason, the coroner will investigate that. And that equally is quite a rigorous process. The amount of documentation that you provide to the coroner can be, you know, in 9-10 inches of paper.
Yep.
You know, it is a very, it's an exhaustive process to have a look to see, okay, what was cause and effect, what occurred about it, what did our notes say about the incident, if there was an incident involved, or anything else that could help the coroner make a determination as to what went wrong and what should be done about it on behalf of the industry.
Yes, well, I don't think there was any suggestion in this particular story that the death, which happened the following day, was related to the evidence of these crawly creatures. But as you say, we don't know.
Yeah.
But if let's assume you found yourself facing such a difficult issue such as this, it's about to go public, would you manage that yourself, or would you seek professional advice for a brand to be able to go in and help you manage something like that?
I think in a modern world, most people try and manage complaints.
Yeah.
That you acknowledge what's occurred,
yep.
You acknowledge what you know about the incident, you then acknowledge what you don't know about it, but requires further investigation. And that's in this particular situation, they're the things that we don't know. That, you know, we certainly know what seems to have occurred, how it occurred, and what should have occurred, and in ad remedy, and a whole range of other issues are not known to us as we sit here.
Mm.
So all we're getting is a news grab, and we don't know what else may or may not have occurred during the time. It would seem that the organisation concerned were empowered enough to actually dismiss the management of that particular facility.
Right.
So they certainly took...
So they took some action.
They did take immediate action,
right?
According to what I know about it.
And they're not, well, currently, but if they just turned around and changed their name, for want of a better term, in inverted commas, then that's probably not the best thing to do from a brand perspective
because
that's trying to, yes, I realise
absolutely.
You're trying to close one door and open another, but... As you mentioned, Stuart, taking full responsibility and acknowledging what's happened.
And even if an organisation changes their name in the modern world within aged care, it shows on the My Aged Care website that, you know, formerly
was previously known as, yes.
Yeah,
so, you can't hide it.
You know, you can't hide. And if something's gone wrong, then you need to acknowledge what's gone wrong, why it's wrong. Was it a rogue event? Or is it something that is a systemic issue that that warrants immediate redress?
Mm. I did say at the very outset, didn't I, that Stuart was that font of knowledge.
Yes, he was,
and
he is.
They are difficult topics. You're only as, you know, you can never predict what is going to happen when dealing with human beings.
Yes,
and
of
that's
course.
The same as hospitals.
Mm. Oh, no, absolutely. No question.
Anything that's dealing with people at a time when they are vulnerable,
yep.
Has the potential to create grief for family, for the person, and for the organisation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what you do about that.
Well, we didn't get onto the major topics this week, so we'll have to cover it off next week.
No, we will. But it was great to speak to you about this topic anyway, yeah. Stuart, because it is so topical.
Despite the fact that I'm feeling, under pressure.
Yeah.
No, you did a
you handled it beautifully, Stuart.
The thing I always like about you, Stuart, and I can always trust that we'll get a good, solid, non-judgmental answer in terms of what, you know, you're not trying to protect your industry or anything. You call it as it happens. Now, we've got, I've got a little special favour to ask you this week.
You want me to pay you?
No. We've got Samantha Dixon coming in shortly. Now, as you're on your lonesome, would you like to join us to talk about her subject matter?
That'd be good.
We can't keep you in for the third one because you can't hear, because that's a telephone one.
All right, I'm happy to meet Samantha.
So in the meantime, let's have a little bit of music. I thought we might have something a little bit gentle.
Oh.
You know, you'll remember this.
Welcome back. You're still with the Age Stage. And we have with us Samantha Dickerson from Inspired Funeral Planning. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you, Vicky. Thanks, Brody.
Good to see
back.
You.
It's been a little while.
It has been.
Nice to have you back in the
I'm
studio.
Glad to be back in.
Now, things have moved along a bit
they
since
have.
We last
What's
spoke.
Going on?
They have. Well, the website's up and running, and I've just finished doing a Cert 4 in Small Business Management just to get the business off and running.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
So it's very interesting.
That's so great. Give us a rundown now that you've completely worked it all out, because it's all a bit working it out on the as you went.
That's it.
You've been in the business of the funeral space for how many years?
21
years.
Mm-hmm.
And you've now decided that the time has come where people should not be feel as if they're locked in. Is that and should have choices?
Well, that's it. I think a lot of people, well, first of all, people don't talk about death to start with, but I really feel that there's a general shift in the industry where people are wondering why they don't have more choices when mm-hmm. it comes to the funeral for their loved one. You know, why do they have to have it at the funeral director's chapel, or why do they have to have it at the crematorium chapel? But also, in a vulnerable state, they're not questioning anything, they're just accepting what has been told to them. And after 21 years in the industry, I really feel that the funeral directors really should be doing more for their client families, and that's where I come in.
Right.
Because they're not offering that sort of variety in service? Is
no,
that what
they're
you're
not.
Feeling?
They're not. And what my business is, Inspired Funeral Planning, provides independent, unbiased funeral planning solutions for families tailored to their needs and their financial situation.
So what does that mean, Sam? Because obviously we have an older population up of a village, and I think the traditional retirement, the traditional, not retirement director, the traditional funeral director would come along and provide for them the bog standard service. So what's different? What can we offer?
So I pretty much come in and talk to families about what their needs are, whether they want burial, cremation. So being independent, I'm not associated with a particular funeral director or a particular cemetery. So therefore, if want of a better word, of a broker, I can find the best possible financial or funeral planning solution for them based on their needs without the emotional involvement of the family. Very unlikely that they're going to go shopping around. Whereas I can ask those hard questions of the funeral directors, what are they going to do for this client family to help them?
So you don't actually undertake...
I'm not a funeral director.
You're not a funeral
director. I'm an independent funeral planner. That's right. And having been in the industry for 21 years, I know a lot of people in the industry. I know what you need and what you don't need.
Yeah. Could I use a personal illustration?
Yeah.
One of the things that we found challenging as a family was when Mum passed away a few years ago. Mum was very specific. No funeral, no this, no that. She had everything written down. And as her executor, we honoured that. Now, that's a little more complex to actually do. We decided that we would have a loose gathering of family, close family members, that might have numbered only about a dozen or so, and we asked for the use of a room from a funeral parlour for 5 minutes. Fine, says the funeral director. And then we spoke about the normal sorts of things. When we received the bill, that was certainly a shock.
A very expensive 5 minutes.
It was the most expensive 5 minutes we've ever had in our entire life. Mm. And we thought it was fairly reasonable, you know, presuming that the funeral director made sufficient money from the provision of a coffin and the other things that go with it, the notice in the paper and blah, blah, blah. But we were really surprised and ill-equipped to actually think that through at the time. So what would you have done differently for me?
So that's where I would have sat down with you as a family and worked out exactly what you were after and then negotiated with the funeral director on your behalf to say, well, this family requires this and this. They don't need X, Y, and Z. So what can you do to assist them? But again, you also not necessarily have to have it at the funeral director's chapel either.
Mm.
You know,
we just agreed to, there's a street corner that we all agreed the family would just be strolling along quite casually and innocently, you know, I think it was a Thursday walk, and we just happened to bump into each other at 2 o'clock at that particular corner because we wanted to honour Mum's request of no get-together.
So you wanted it to seem as if you've just bumped
an accidental gathering.
You know, what are you doing here at this particular time?
Yes, yeah. So I think with my level of experience and expertise, I can actually, and I know a lot of people in the funeral industry, obviously, So my ability to actually negotiate with the funeral directors as to what they can do to best assist my client families, but also talk to families about the other alternative of a different venue to have the funeral service. You know, I recently had a chat to my mum. She's an artist, and she said, actually, I don't want to be at a funeral director's chapel. I think I'd rather be at a gallery.
Yes,
the Heidi Gallery.
Because that's meant it. So much to her from
exactly.
being an artist.
And she said, you don't even need my coffin there. She said, I want an audiovisual presentation, lots of food and drink, and people talking about me.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Oh, does it come down to this 7 days thing? Is that why the pressure is so great?
No, people feel that they have to get it done within 2, 3, 4, 5 days. There's no requirements.
No, exactly. But
at all.
Yeah.
By law, that state.
Can I ask a question that you might all know, but I don't? So during that period of time, say it does take 2 weeks or whatever you want mm-hmm. to do, where is the body being kept?
In the mortuary.
So it's just in the mortuary, and it can stay there until an arrangement.
The right preparation has been done.
Right.
For the deceased. Yeah.
Okay.
So that means a funeral director.
So a funeral director
is notionally holding the body until the wishes are fulfilled.
That's right.
Okay.
And some people might say, "Oh, look, the family are away; they're not going to be back for 2 weeks." Providing sufficient preparation's been done, that's not an issue.
Yeah. Mum passed away in the hospital, and the funeral director came, collected Mum from the hospital, mm-hmm. and then it was up to us to enter into the arrangements. Mm. And that would be fairly typical, yeah. I would
it
think.
Is, yeah, it is very typical.
So
very
then
typical,
is that where you were feeling the pressure of you had to do it within this 7 days or within this week because of the funeral director thinking, well,
the hospital,
sorry to say this, but I need the space?
Yeah, the hospital is the one that really needs the space. I don't know what happens if you pass away at home.
Well, depending on, if you pass away in a private hospital, they will want the deceased transferred as soon as possible because they don't have a mortuary. Public hospitals do have a mortuary, but they'll want the deceased transferred. Nursing homes, they want the deceased transferred
absolutely.
Straight away because they've got someone else waiting for that bed.
Yes.
Now, just because a funeral director has transferred your loved one into their care doesn't mean you have to use them.
Oh, right.
Until you've signed on the dotted line, you're not obliged.
So would it be the facility in that case, like whether it's a hospital or a nursing home, they've got a relationship with a funeral director?
They'll have a relationship with a local funeral director.
And then, but you don't need to go to that particular one.
No, that's right.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So certainly in our case.
See, that's handy to know.
We have a relationship with all the funeral directors down in the region,
mm-hmm.
and people most often actually have done something as
some pre-preparation.
Work, so they would have their preferred funeral director identified. That doesn't solve the issue for the people who don't know what it is that they want to do.
That's it, and that's where having the conversation where I can talk to them about, do you want burial or cremation? Where would you like to have the funeral service? Just having those conversations with people talking about, yes, you can prepay your funeral. My suggestion is that you put it into a funeral bond rather than assigning it to a
particular.
Because say, for example,
because once you're locked in with them, you are locked in?
You are locked in. You can transfer it to another funeral director, but there will be some
fees
involved. Now, say, for example, there is a funeral director down here in Mornington on the highway who has recently sold their chapel.
Yes.
So all those people that had a prepaid funeral with them that wanted the use of that chapel, that can no longer happen.
Right.
So what happens?
So at the time, the funeral director will say to them, well, I'm sorry, that chapel doesn't exist anymore. You'll have to have your funeral service at Bunurong.
Mm.
Unless you're involved.
Unless I'm involved, in which I'd say to them, why don't we look at perhaps the Mornington Golf Course or
some other
winery.
On the 18th hole.
Exactly.
I go to a winery myself as well.
You know, but there's so many different choices, and unfortunately the choices aren't offered because the cold reality is that a funeral director would prefer you to go to their chapel because of course
it's convenient.
And it's convenient for them and they would like you to have the service at either 10 or 2. That's your choice.
Mm.
Well, what happens if you want it at midday? I'm sorry, that doesn't work in with us. And similarly, if they say, you can have it at the crematorium chapel, then you have 45 minutes to sum up your loved one's life before the next funeral director rolls in. And I don't particularly want to production line when my mum's time comes.
How are you? How
on
are
my
you,
own.
Are you talking? Exactly. Are you going
I
to villages?
I want to dance at mine. Well, I won't be.
You won't be in there. I hope not. I'll have a dance with you.
Yes.
A bit stiff, girl. You're going out and talking to villages and you know, groups of people about...
Yeah, so what I'm planning on doing is having a marketing pack put together and going to talk to villages. And also I want to talk to palliative care places because there's obviously...
Probus clubs?
Probus clubs. I've already done a talk at my mother's Probus club, so that was really good. Because I think a lot of people are starting to say, well, hang on a minute, why does it cost $15,000 or more? What do I actually get for that amount of money? And what happens if I want something a little bit different?
Yeah, well, I'd like to book you for the men's shed, to get you into the men's shed. Talk to
I'd
the boys
love
there.
To tap to them.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
Could I just, you were going to wind that up, weren't you?
I do, because we've got another guest. Yeah.
Could I just share with you that I went to a funeral at the Art Centre? Mm-hmm. Recently in Hamer Hall.
Oh, that would have been quite...
And that was just such a fitting tribute for the person concerned to have, you know, there would have to have been, I don't know, 5,000 people there.
Ouch.
10,000 people
there.
And there was a performance. I think it was the Melbourne Orchestra were playing. There were dancers on stage. I mean, it was just a remarkable... tribute to someone who clearly had been a patron of the organisation.
But isn't that amazing that that's the kind of funeral that you remember rather than a production line at a crematorium?
I have to bid you farewell. We've got another...
Thank you, Stuart. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks,
my pleasure.
Thanks, Vicky.
My
we'll
pleasure.
See you soon.
Yes, thanks, definitely.
It's been really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye.
And you're still with The Age Stage. Welcome back. And our next guest is Sue Noble. Now, Sue, you were speaking with Brody earlier in the week because it's volunteering week.
Yes, it was.
Yes, I must have made a great impression to be invited.
You must have,
I'm
Sue.
Honoured.
Now, Sue, I've actually met you and come across you in a previous life I had when I was working with the Frankston Volunteer Resource Centre. And I came to a number of your seminars there that you run through your volunteering organisation. So it's nice to cross paths with you again. But can you tell us a little bit about, because I know you're CEO and everything like that, so tell us a little bit about that as well as what's happening here in Volunteering Week.
Yeah, well, Volunteering Victoria is the peak body for volunteering. So we represent... organisations with volunteer workforces, organisations like Impact Volunteering there in Frankston or the Mornington Volunteer Resource Centre that support volunteering locally. And we also represent the interests of volunteers. And we advocate for volunteering. We advise government on policy related to volunteering and the three tiers of government. We run training and professional development events. In fact, we've got a big conference coming up at the end of June.
Right.
We run specific programs, like we've got a help out, a spontaneous emergency volunteering program, corporate volunteering program. So we sort of covered a range of areas of activity to support volunteering. But I guess in relation to many of the listeners on your program, one of the areas that we're particularly interested in is volunteering to support senior Victorians or older Victorians.
Right, right. And so you can help with facilitating that or just to guide people into that sort of realm?
Well, we've done a little bit of some consultation with the Commissioner for Senior Victorians, Gerard Mansour. I don't know whether you've ever... spoken to Gerard. He undertook some work a while back now and produced a report called Aging is Everyone's Business,
right.
A report on the social isolation and loneliness amongst senior Victorians. A really, really good report, really easy to read and easy to follow, unlike some reports that come out of government perhaps. But one of the things I really loved about what he said in his report was that volunteering is a really important way to mitigate against isolation and loneliness amongst senior Victorians. So, you know, volunteering by senior Victorians, it gets them more engaged in their communities, keeps them active, supports health and
communicating and networked.
Absolutely, yeah. But then the other side of it is supporting volunteering to help deliver services to people, to older people, and people generally, really. So we're keen to continue to work with Jared on developing resources and tools and ideas to support volunteering amongst senior Victorians. Yes, and I know there are some projects running at the moment that have come out of that report, and I believe there's a project in the Mornington Peninsula. It's not volunteering specific, but I think it is related to some of the work that was done in that report.
Now, when we spoke to you on Monday, you absolutely gobsmacked me by telling me that some finance number crunching had been done, and it was estimated that in Australia the net effective value of the hours performed by volunteers in this country amounts to $290 billion. Is that...
Yeah, look, that's certainly the figure that Lisa Lodwyer from Flinders University arrived at. She looked at things like the hours that people worked, but there were a number of other dimensions that led to her calculation. And it doesn't surprise me at all, because I think, again, when we spoke on Monday, we talked about the number of people in Victoria who volunteer, and the value of volunteering in Victoria is really significant as well. And I think, again, and this is often the case with senior Victorians, and I ask your listeners to think about this. A lot of older people are volunteering, but they don't necessarily describe themselves as volunteers.
No, you're quite right.
So, I mean, I may have mentioned a lady I met in Laverton who she was telling me about all the volunteering she does, and I said, "Oh, you're a great volunteer." She said, "Oh, I'm not a volunteer." I said, "Well, yes, you are. All those amazing things you're doing." She said, "I'm just a member of the community and I'm helping out."
Mm. It's interesting that she hasn't put herself in that category.
Yeah, and I think that the reason I would encourage people to identify as volunteers when they do that sort of work is that when the Australian Bureau of Statistics or anyone else is counting up who is volunteering and the contribution that they make as a result of their volunteering, If people don't identify as volunteers, then we're underreporting the true value of volunteering. And I think if we can get full and accurate and rich pictures of what volunteering looks like in our community, that's going to help us argue for better support for volunteering.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, if you round off the figures, really, as about $400 billion is spent by the government each year as a total. Now, if we rounded the other one off to, say, $300 billion, if the government didn't have, or if the nation didn't have access to the people that cared, then an extra, in theory, an extra $300 billion would be added to the national coffers. Now, the reason I raise that is to declare how absolutely empirical it is to the operation in this country. But we've got this issue that's starting to percolate to the surface, which is good debt, bad debt. And so many senior citizens and people that are on pensions, I think, are being shoveled into that bad debt space because there's nothing at the end of it. But clearly, if you turn that, because a lot of them do volunteer, and you say, well, let's take $300 billion of effort into consideration, and suddenly the picture changes dramatically, does it not?
Well, look, it absolutely does. And I think we had, when we spoke on Monday, I mentioned how unfortunate it is that they have to use such negative language about what is actually building social capital in many instances. And that's what volunteering does more than almost any other activity. It's about people engaging in their communities and supporting their communities and supporting each other. And many, many of the problems that we face today, I think, isolation, loneliness, people being disconnected from their communities, not feeling included, not being supported by fee-for-service activities, etc., can be addressed by volunteering. I mean, I mentioned, I think, that this week, National Volunteer Week, the theme is about the health and well-being benefits of volunteering. imagine a cost to our medical bill, national medical bill, if we didn't have volunteering, because it keeps people active and healthy. Mm-hmm. That's been proven. And also, of course, on the other side of the coin, volunteers contribute so much to the health system.
Absolutely. Yeah, they support the local hospital.
And
healthcare centres and
healthcare. And do we as a society then, are we supporting our volunteers appropriately then, Sue? Or is the government... you know, you're saying that you're working with them on policies and other programs, et cetera. So, you know, I know it's probably a continuous process of improvement, but do you feel that we are, as a society, valuing our volunteers and then caring for them?
No, I mean, I don't believe... I think a lot of people do. I should qualify that by saying I think a lot of people highly value their volunteers.
And down at a grassroots level.
Examples of that. Yeah, but I think a lot of people also take their volunteers for granted or don't even recognise sometimes that the services they're receiving or the activities that they see happening around them are actually largely or significantly or wholly delivered by volunteers. And I also don't think a lot of funders value volunteers. I think they assume that people will volunteer regardless. But I think one of the areas that we argue for more funding support for is sort of, if I can call it, the infrastructure that supports volunteering, and that is making sure that volunteers have a safe workplace, that they're not subject to bullying or harassment or bad working conditions.
And they've got their work is respected. They've got rights.
They've got rights. Absolutely, they've got rights. They've absolutely got responsibilities too. But I often ask the question, we have HR professionals to look after paid staff, hopefully. Most organisations these days have HR people to look after paid staff. But there doesn't seem to be an acknowledgement that there should be somebody
for the volunteers.
Responsible for volunteers in the same way. And why shouldn't people that are giving of their time freely, their
have
time
that support.
And their talent freely, also be
supported.
Looked after?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, Sue, we've run out of time, unfortunately, with you this afternoon or today. So I hope that we can chat to you again soon.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Sue.
Thank you.
Bye.
Okay. Goodbye.
Well, what a show that was.
It was. It was more than a mouthful.
Well, you know, with Sue brought a new dimension to our understanding of volunteers. I think Sam's
and the value
got a great
that
story.
They bring. Sam is
terrific.
Yeah, it's but I think and also very
Stuart. I think Stuart gave us a really deep insight into things that you know have
when there's issues.
Indeed.
Thanks a lot, Brody.
Catch you next week.
Okay, bye.
Take care, my dear. Bye bye.